There are three main lessons in the Conversations with God material. They're the first three lessons that come to us in book one. As you may know, there are nine books in the entire Conversations with God dialogue. But the most important lessons are contained in the first book, important in the sense that really it's all we need. And I've mentioned this before at other times and in other places. The first three lessons in the Conversations with God books are these. One, we are all one. Two, there's enough. Three, there's nothing we have to do. If we took those first three lessons and just applied them in our lives, in fact, even just the first lesson, number one, would be all we really need. But when you add two and three, we have the total package, and nothing else really needs to be said. The additional lessons are bringing us more detail, a little bit deeper, richer understanding of how life works and what makes it possible to create lives of joy and happiness, peace and wonder. But they're not really absolutely necessary. Let's look at the second of these three lessons in this particular program. The second lesson is, there's enough. You know, it's a very difficult concept to embrace. It's the second lesson. It's because it's so important. It's the second thing that we were told in the Conversations with God cosmology because it is so critical. It's such a crucial understanding for humanity to embrace the notion, the idea that there's enough. The idea that there's not enough, the thought that there's scarcity, that there is an insufficient amount of the things we need to be happy is what's created, of course, all of the wars, all of the conflicts, all of the arguments that we see between people, between nations, between even people who love each other. The idea that there's no, you don't understand, that there's not enough. There's not enough time, there's not enough money, there's not enough resources, there's not enough power, there's not enough whatever it is we think we need to be happy. There's not enough. So that's what makes this the second most important message in Conversations with God, because the idea that there's not enough, the idea that there's scarcity and insufficiency is at the root, it is the bottom line cause of virtually all the disagreement and conflict in the human experience. Take it away. Take the idea of scarcity off the table. Embrace the notion that there's enough. And the motivation for our conflict disappears. There's no reason for us to be upset with each other, because all of us would experience that, well, I have enough of what I need to be happy. You have enough of what you need to be happy, so there's enough. So there's no problem. But Conversations with God tells us that there is enough. There's enough. What makes it hard for us to believe is that the evidence of our eyes seems to demonstrate the opposite. We see starvation. We see people struggling financially. We see deprivation. We see suffering everywhere on the planet. Yet, the problem is not that there's not enough to eliminate the suffering and the struggle. That's not the problem. The problem is not a challenge of insufficiency. The problem is we have insufficient will, insufficient desire to take the stuff of which there is enough and make sure that everybody has some. There's enough of everything we need on this planet for everybody who lives on this planet to be totally okay, to be totally happy, to be totally content. But the problem is one of distribution. It's not a problem of supply. There's enough that life has supplied us. It's a problem of distribution. How big is that problem? Let's take a look. Over 650 children die on this planet every hour of starvation. Did you hear what I said? I said over 650 children die on this planet every hour of starvation. How is that possible? How is that possible on a planet where we throw away more than enough food in the restaurants of the world, in the restaurants of New York, London, and Paris, to feed an entire village for a week? Is it a problem of not enough food or not enough will, not enough desire to get the food to those children and to everybody who needs it? Do you realize that 1 in 8 people on this planet will go to bed hungry tonight? 1 of every 8 people now living on the earth will go to bed hungry tonight. On a planet where there's more than enough. You know, you could almost understand it, really. You could almost say, well, you know, I'm sorry that it is that way, but I can understand it because there's not enough food to go around. But there's so much food to go around that we throw it away at the end of the day in the restaurants of New York, London, and Paris, even in our own homes, those of us who live in the lap of luxury and have all that we need. Do you know that 1.8 billion people on this planet right now do not have electricity? Is there not enough electricity to go around? There's 1.8 billion people on the planet who don't have electricity in this, the 21st century. I know that's hard to believe, but it's true. But it's even worse than that. 1.5 billion people don't even have clean water. What, is there not enough clean water to go around? Of course there is. We simply haven't found a way to get it to the people. With all our brilliance, with all our technology, we can send a man to the moon, but we can't get clean water to 1.5 billion people. Don't even have toilets. 2.6 billion people. That's 1/4 of humanity. Actually, more than 1/4 of humanity do not have indoor sanitation. Now you might say, well, it's just an inconvenience. It's just an inconvenience. Do you know how many people die on this planet because of health problems created by such inconveniences? I won't even give you the numbers. Just make you depressed. It would make you ask, no, wait a minute. Wait a minute. How can these things be true on a planet that houses people who imagine themselves to be evolved, who imagine themselves to be compassionate and caring people? See, it would be one thing, you know, if we lived on a planet where nobody cared, where people were just cruel and... But that's not how it is. Most people, the vast, vast majority of people, are wonderful, caring, loving people who would never want anybody else to suffer. What's the problem then? If the problem is not insufficiency and the problem is not what people really feel in their heart they would like to experience, what is the problem? The problem is systemic. The problem has to do with the systems that we have put into place, that we have allowed to continue to exist on this planet. The systems of economics, more specifically the systems of business, the way we conduct the business of life. We have decided that profit should be the motivating energy behind the decisions that are made about who shall have toilets, who shall have food, who shall have medicine. Do you know how many millions of people do not have access to the modern medical care, to modern medicines, to the miracles of modern medicine? They don't have access to it. Do you know why? Not enough money can be made. Not enough money can be made by the companies who produce our medicines to make it available to people who can't afford it. But the problem is that people should be able to afford it. If the economy was created in such a way that there was equal opportunity available for all. But of course we know that that's not true. It simply isn't so. We've created a world, we've created a planet on which you have to justify your existence. Think about this for a minute. We didn't ask to come here. We didn't ask to be born. We just woke up one day and here we are. If we're lucky, we had a little bit of education. If we're lucky, we had some good fortune in our families. If we're lucky, we weren't born in the 2/3 of the world's locations where the conditions I've just expressed do not exist. Where there's a lack of good education, a lack of resources. And then we find ourselves somehow ill-equipped, not containing or holding the tools we need to justify our existence on the earth. See, we have this fascinating notion that we need to somehow justify our being here in order to receive what we need to be here. We didn't ask to be here. Nobody asked us if we wanted to be here. Here we are. It's not my fault that I was born. It's not my fault. But having been born, I got to figure out a way to justify the fact that I was born. Interesting notion. Only a primitive species would even think about embracing such an idea. Only a primitive me-first species would allow such an idea to form the basis of its global economic system. So we have a global economic system that says, unless you can contribute to society, by the way, and contributing to society looks like this, you have to contribute in a way that produces a profit for someone else. Or to put it in simple language, somebody else has to earn money off of you. Someone else has to find a way to make money off of you and your talents and your skills and your abilities. If you don't have talents, skills, or abilities that someone else can use to make money for themselves, you're out of luck. I mean, you're in deep trouble. Or let's say you do have the talent and you do have the intelligence and you did get the education, which is not true of everyone, of course, but let's say that you did. You got the education, you had the talent, you had the skills to help someone else earn money so that they will give you money so they can make even more money. Let's say all that's true. And then you have an accident. Then something happens to you. And suddenly you can't use your own skills. You can't use the talents that you had in order to make money for somebody else. Now you become dependent on others. And there are certain societies on this planet where that's not okay. Very not okay. People don't want to have to help those who have become dependent on them, on the state, or dependent on the government, or dependent on the collective, the people. So if you are one of the unfortunate ones who can't even use the skills you have because of something that happened to you, because of some health condition or some circumstance or situation, or because of your upbringing or because of where you were born, if you're one of those who's dependent, then you become a second-class citizen at best. And at worst, you become one of the defiled, one of those who are not honored in any way, one of those who should be ashamed. You should be ashamed of yourself because you can't justify your existence. And somehow, I have to somehow pay for your being on the planet. You know, this whole construction, this whole way of society building itself, because we don't understand who we are in relationship to each other, is rooted in the thought that I expressed in the first lesson of this series, the idea that we're not one, the idea that we're separate from each other. We would never let such a thing occur in our lives if we thought that we are all one. But the idea that we're separate from each other means, you know, you take care of yourself, you take care of yourself, you take care of yourself, and I'll take care of myself. And if I can't take care of myself, all I can do is hope that you won't be too mad at me, that you'll be charitable enough to help me out because I can't take care of myself anymore. Or maybe I never could because of my background or the country in which I was born or the place within that country in which I was raised, or some other pre-existing condition that I had nothing to do with. Fascinating. Now, here's one way we could solve a lot of this. Not, it won't all go away, but a lot of it could go away. This idea that there's not enough. Because here's what I notice. In most of the places of the earth, there is enough for members of our clan, of our family. You know, I give lectures around the world, and I often make this noticement. I often offer this observation. In many of the nations of the world, we have holidays, you know, festivals, family events, whatever it might be, to which we invite members of our family. Maybe once or twice or three times a year, perhaps on celebrations of someone's birth, or for some other national holiday, we invite people in. And we have a wonderful celebration. We have some food, perhaps we have some wine or some other libation, some other liquid entertainment, something to drink. And we have a good time with each other. It's common all over the world. But supposing you were at one of your family's celebrations and a knock came at the door and you go to the front door and it's Uncle Bill. And Uncle Bill, who lives far away, he doesn't even live anywhere near us. He lives maybe in another country. Maybe he works in another country for a major international corporation. But he happens to be in our hometown. We didn't expect him. He says, "Hey, I knew you'd be having a celebration because our family always celebrates at this holiday, and I'm in town. I didn't know I would be in town, but here I am. Could I come in and join the celebration?" Nobody says, "No, Uncle Bill, you can't come in. We didn't plan for you. We only put out tables, chairs, and meals for 12 of us. You're the 13th. You can't come in. There's not enough to go around." Of course there's enough. We make sure there's enough by sharing what there is and dividing it in 13 parts rather than 12 parts. "Come on in, Uncle Bill." And we're excited that he's here. Uncle Bill is here. "We didn't know he was in town. Uncle Bill is here. Sit down. Pull up a chair." And we divide the food and the drinks by one more person. And miraculously, even though we only planned for 12, there's enough. Now supposing that the same family is sitting down at the same table the next year, 1 year later. Bill's not there. Bill's now back in his job overseas. So we've planned for 12 people, and a knock comes at the door. We open the door, and it's a total stranger. He said, you know, I saw the lights on in the house, and I was just looking through one of the windows. I really wasn't eavesdropping, but I just happened to walk by, and I saw through one of the windows that all of you here were having a wonderful time. I could see the food being put out, the drinks being hoisted in toast to each other. I saw the wonderful time you're having. I wonder if I could come in and join you. I've been down on my luck. I haven't had a good year, and I have no place to go and nothing to eat, and I haven't eaten in days. And I wondered if I might come in and join you. How many families would say, oh, of course, come on in. Come on in. Set another table. Set another plate at the table. Bring up another chair. Bring out some food. Let's divide it all up for one more person. How many of you would say to that total stranger you've never met before, come on in and sit down at our table? Maybe some of you would. Fair enough. I assure you that some of you would not. You might be able to maybe give him some little bit at the door. Here's a little bit to take with you. Maybe. Some people would actually just close the door and say, sorry, sir, sorry. Because he's not family. He's not family. See, we never say no to family, but we say no to strangers all the time. So the solution is really very simple. There's enough when everybody is family. I want you to write that on your mirror. Put it on your mirror in lipstick or in soap, on your bathroom mirror. There's enough when everybody is family. It's really quite a simple idea, isn't it? Quite a simple notion. There's enough to go around when we decide that we can put into place the systems that help us to make sure that everyone has all they need to be perfectly happy, perfectly joyful, perfectly content, perfectly safe, and joyously human. What would it take for us to decide that? It would take a brand new economic system. Right now, we have an economic system where 8 people, believe this or not, I know you might find this hard to believe, but statistics have shown it to be true. 8 people, 8, not 800, not 8,000, 8 human beings now hold more wealth and resources than 1/2 of the human race combined. And we think that's okay. That is, most of us think that's okay. And those of us who don't think it's okay don't think there's anything they can do about it. It's not okay, but what can I do about it? Because we have not created the collective will to make a new decision about who we are as a species, who we are as humanity. How do we eliminate the obscenity, the sheer obscenity of 650 children dying every hour on this planet from starvation? How can we allow such a thing to go on? And how can we change it? By changing our idea. By eliminating the thought forever and even forevermore that there's not enough. The idea that there is an insufficient amount of anything at all is simply a fabrication. It is a false notion that has been put into the common culture. But I understand how it could look that way, because we see, as I mentioned at the outset of this lesson, we see at every glance that people are suffering from not having enough. Let's make a decision. Let's make a joint, a collaborative decision to change the collective experience of humanity. Let's do it by deciding to demonstrate, each in our own individual way, that there is enough. Enough in our lives, enough on the planet, enough in the world to supply everyone in the world with everything they need. But I want to talk about one other thing before we say goodbye on this lesson. How do you think that your life might change? What would it do in your life, to say nothing of what it would do in the world at large, if you actually had the idea that there's enough of everything you need? Forget about the suffering people of the world. Forget about the starving children. I mean, for now, I don't want to be crass. I don't want to be cold-hearted. But just for the purposes of this discussion, let's forget about the starving children and about the 1 out of 8 people who will go to bed hungry tonight. Let's forget about those just for now. Just in our own life. How many times in your own life, even though you're living a good life, how many times have you felt, oh my gosh, there's not enough. There's not enough. I don't have enough money. I don't have enough time. We don't have enough food. We don't have enough of what we think we need to be happy. How would your own life change? Forget about the life of the suffering of the world. How would your life change if you decided tomorrow, hey, you know what? There's enough. And there will always be enough. That was the great lesson of my life. I'm an old person now. I'm starting into the first third of my 7th decade on the planet. So I can tell you from experience, not only is there enough, there will always be enough. Did I, like most of us, have thoughts in my life at certain times that there's not enough money, there's not enough time, there's not enough resources, even some days there's not enough food? Yeah, I've had that experience. But you know what? I'm still here. So there must have been enough. After more than 70 years, my life has demonstrated to me that there must have been enough. And your life will demonstrate the same thing to you. You'll still be here tomorrow. You'll still be here 1 year from today. You'll still be here 5 and 10 years from today. Unless, of course, you're not. In which case, it won't matter, will it? In which case, it won't matter. But chances are that you'll still be here tomorrow, even though today you may think there's not enough. So what would happen, just kind of curious, if you thought there was enough and that there will always be enough? What if that was your point of view? What if your point of view about life was, don't worry about it. I know it looks like right now there's not enough, but judge not by appearances. One of the great teachers of humanity once said, judge not by appearances. What if you had the faith in life, faith enough to say, I know it looks like right now there's not enough. We can't get through the week. We can't get through the month. But you know what? We're going to make it. Because we said the same thing 2 years ago. We said the same thing 5 years ago. We said the same thing 3 days ago. And here we are. What if we decided that the evidence of our past would probably demonstrate itself and play itself out again as the evidence of our future? And what if we decided that, you know what, stop worrying. It's all going to work out. There's enough. Now, I want to suggest to you that metaphysics being what it is, metaphysics being the force that creates energetic signatures producing physical outcomes in life, outcomes that reflect what we think is going to happen. What if we decided that there is enough even before we had evidence to demonstrate that there's enough, just knowing that there would be and there will be always? Would that, do you think, in any way impact the appearance of enoughness, of sufficiency in our lives? Or to put it in simple language, do you think that positive thinking would have any effect whatsoever on the outcomes in your day-to-day experience? I promise you that it would. I promise you that when you think positively and say to yourself, we live in a world of abundance and there will be enough. And I promise you, my dear family, my children, my friends, and myself, I promise you, my dear self, that you'll still be here a year from today. And there will be enough. Now, one last little tidbit around this. You know how to demonstrate that truth to yourself? Can I share with you how you can demonstrate in real life the truth that there's enough so that even you would believe it? Even in the moment when you think there's not enough? Especially in that moment, the next time you think you're on the edge, right on the edge, and there's not enough, there won't be enough, we can't get through the week, we can't get through the month, how are we going to do it, there's not enough, in that very moment, take what there is not enough of, not enough food, not enough money, perhaps not enough time, whatever it might be, whenever you think there's not enough, at just that moment, go out and find someone who has even less. Find someone who has even less than you do when you think you do not have enough. And give them that of which you think there's not enough. Why do that? Because it's a vivid demonstration of your sufficiency. And what you demonstrate in your present moment will be demonstrated to you in your own future. That which you wish to experience, cause another person to experience. If you wish to experience that there's enough, make sure that someone who has even less has more of what they do not have enough of in their own mind by you supplying it to them. Listen, I wouldn't suggest this to you if I didn't see that it works. I've had this occur to me in my own life. I've had people who had very little give me that of which they had very little when I had even less. And I've also turned it around. I have given to those who have less than me, even when I had very little. And now that I have a great deal, I do the same as well. Never pass anybody, ever. On the street, on the sidewalk, in the world, who has less than you without giving them some of what you have. Share. Supply. Provide. Be the source of that which you would like to have more of in your life, in the life of another. What do you want more of? More love? Provide someone else with more love. What do you want more of? More money? Provide someone else who has even less with more money. What do you want more of? More time to get things done? Provide someone else who has even less time than you do. And give them some of your time. I'm telling you, this works. What goes around comes around. I'm telling you, this works. This is how the system works. It's really quite simple. I could, of course, be wrong about all of this, but I don't think so.